You're listening to Scratch Take, a podcast where songwriters tell the story behind their craft. I'm Jeremy Katzenstein. Lucy Woodward is a singer-songwriter who is perhaps best known for co-writing Stacey Orrico's 2003 pop hit, There's Gotta Be More to Life, as well as for her work with jazz fusion group Snarky Puppy. In this episode, Lucy talks about how singing on commercial jingles helped her discover the versatility in her own sound, and what it feels like to hand a hit song over to somebody else. Still I'm dying to begin.
My name is Lucy Woodward. When I was 12, I was home from school, sick. I was probably faking it, too. I probably wasn't even sick. And I heard this cartoon kind of theme song. It was maybe like the 10 a.m. hour. And, it kind of went like, dun, 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 something really, you know, meant for a 12-year-old. I don't remember. I don't think it did very well. But whatever it was corny. The melody was corny. And I remember, you know, hearing it, and then it went to commercial break. And then I found myself in my room suddenly needing to write lyrics to that melody. I don't know where it came from. I was like, this is so weird. Why would I do that? It's already a song that's written. I had probably some crush on some boy in school, and I just needed to get out whatever I was feeling in that moment to that melody, because it was so hooky. And so meant for a child, you know, to remember and say, Mommy, I want to watch that show again. But I just had to get it out of me. So I remember that was the beginning of, I don't just sing songs. I actually have things I want to say. When I first was signed, my first record deal on Atlantic Records, that was 2003. It was 2003, and it was one of those things, like a major label, they love your song, they love you, do this, do this, do this, and you're on the radio, and everything happens like super, super fast. I think I was ready to have a record deal, but maybe I was still figuring out my sound. I'm definitely a pop writer, absolutely a pop writer, but I come from a lot of soul and jazz influence, and when that deal was given to me, I was suddenly in this pop rock, like Kelly Clarkson, Michelle Branch world. And I loved the songs I was writing. I loved the co-writers I was writing them with. I loved my producers, John Shanks and Kevin Kadish, who were just like huge pop writers and song producers now. And I was definitely at where I needed what I was at, where I was at, period. When everything kind of goes away really fast, they say, oh, you're not successful if you're not on MTV. So they always make you think like, you're just a total failure. You might as well quit if you're not on Top 40 Radio or MTV. You stink. You might as well give up. But that didn't really make sense to me because music is what I did. And I'd made a living as a singer since out of high school. And that could also attribute to my sound, is that I would get called to sing on jingles and I'd have to sound like Janis Joplin one day. Or Enya the second day. Every kiss begins with K. Anyway, you have to put on different hats, different costumes, and be that girl for the day. And so doing that, I realized I had a lot of different sounds that I could play with. So why would I ever, ever, ever be one thing? Like, my mom was an opera singer. I grew up listening to La Boheme and La Traviata. And she was also a belly dancer, so there was a lot of Middle Eastern music in my house. So I was like, you know, I was put through the musical circus growing up. How could I ever be one thing? That was where I came from. But I had to prove that for a long time. And just, so I'm on this, you know, this my first record deal, and it was, you're in the pop rock world and you have to, you know, lose 20 pounds and everything that you do to be on pop radio. And it was amazing. Of course, your doors have opened. Life is changing for you right before your eyes. And then you lose your deal, get signed to the next deal, lose that deal, you know, for whatever reason, whether you didn't sell any records or your A&R person gets fired or whatever it is, you know. And then you say, hey, wait a second, I keep going back to what I did, you know, after high school, which I remember singing in coffee shops, singing jazz standards in the East Village in restaurants for, you know, tip jar money and a plate of spaghetti. Like, that's what I did from about 19 or 20 on. And those were the kinds of songs I was writing more, where it was really coming from like a songstress kind of jazz standard place. I had written There's Gotta Be More to Life with two amazing songwriters, Kevin Kadish, who is like the producer and songwriter of All About That Bass, Meghan Trainor. Like, he's just done such incredible things, all these country hits. He's like, he's so amazing. And my friend Sibel Breer, who is an incredible songwriter and artist, developer and producer. And so we were writing a lot for my record. I was signed to Atlantic Records. It was 2002, writing a bunch of songs. We had written another few songs on that album, my album together. And then I had this little melody that I brought to Kevin, and it went something like, da 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 da. And I thought that was a chorus. I was probably singing a little bit higher, and he's like, no, that's a verse. And then it started like escalating off into this other section. And anyway, brought Sibel in, we finished it. It was really cool. We knew, you know, Kevin worked so fast. He did this demo really, really quickly. And then, but my record was pretty much done, this Atlantic record. So it was the kind of the 11th hour song where we turned it into the label and they were like, oh my God, that's a hit, or, you know, or it's so good and it makes the album even that much stronger. At the same time, Kevin was working a lot for Matt Serletic on Virgin Records, who was developing this artist named Stacey Orrico. And she was kind of doing the crossover thing, coming from the Christian pop world. And she was now making her way into the other side, you know, the non-Christian pop world. And she didn't want to be one of these MTV girls wearing a bikini and talking about boys, 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 and all that. She wanted a positive message. She's heard this song and she's like, this is so up my alley. So the deal was, if we gave that song to her, and she was so young, so she likely would be on MTV. I was already 26, you know, 27, 28. And so the likelihood of her having a top 5 hit or top 10 hit or an MTV hit would be way more likely than me. Just because I was like slightly that much older than her. So she heard it, Stacey Orrico heard it, her label loved it, and the deal was, if we have her put it out, then I can't release it in this country. It would be a bonus track in Japan, Germany, wherever. And so the Underdogs, her producer, their production team, they redid her track, she re-sang it, it gave it way more of like a hip-hop R&B flavor. It went through so many stages, probably over a period of 6 months, and I knew once we wrote it, the most important thing is to have the baby, have the songwriting, have that thing, and then saying, what is the life that it's going to be? So I really had no problem, spiritually, musically, physically. I was just like, go, make it happen, baby, you know? I really had no problem letting that go, and she killed it. I think the best piece of songwriting advice I ever got off the top of my head, one is just to be believable in your word. Not to tell the truth, because you can lie your face off. I know one will know. It's just a story you're telling. But you can just, but tell, but be truthful in the sense of be true to your true to your word. And as far as me, I sing those words. So I always want to be as believable and really be in it and just be as best as I know how. And another piece of advice I got a long time ago, I think from my publisher, my old publisher, I'm very good friends with still, was just make sure if you're collaborating with people, just listen. Everybody has things to say. Listen to people and listen to anybody else in the room or everybody else in the room. Everybody has something to say, even though you might be the artist going in there. And everyone's supposed to listen to you and you're the one who's supposed to be happy. Everyone in that room should have something to say. And it's okay to listen. It's also very powerful to do that. You're not giving anything away by listening and just staying quiet for a little bit too.
Thanks so much to Lucy Woodward for coming on to Scratch Take. Visit scratchtake.com to find a link to Lucy's most recent album called Till They Bang on the Door. You'll also find a complete playlist of all of the songs featured in today's episode. And finally, if you like the show, make sure to subscribe on iTunes for more deep dives into the minds of songwriters.